Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to Third Stream View in this pre-recording for Monday evening, September 12th. I'm your not-so-humble host, PK, and I am traveling, so I'm not at my Skype site with all my office stuff to help me out. I'm at my, with my cell phone, but I'm interviewing, I'll be interviewing a friend of mine whom I've known for years, and I'm really excited to have him on the show, so I hope everything sounds okay. We had a little trouble when we were tweaking it, doing a little sound check, but hopefully everything is fine now. We're going to get cut right to the show. Let me say once again, like I always try to remember to say, is thanks again to BBSRadio.com, and thank goodness for alternative radio, because the status quo corporate Zionist media excludes important positions, points of view, opinions, as they continue their usual status quo opinion cartel. So PK, with the help of BBS Radio, we blast through all of that. And so today I welcome my friend Phil, whom I've known this year, about 33 years this year. I played in his band years ago, got some more learning about pop music and different kind of songs, and we played all kinds of stuff, and they were very funny. But more importantly, back in those days, I was a liberal Republican. And by that, I mean I was socially tolerant, but I was fiscally responsible. I believe that, you know, you don't run deficits and you know how to manage money, but you're socially tolerant about what people want to pursue in their own lives as long as they don't bother someone else. So traveling to gigs with Phil in his van, we struck up different conversations, and he started saying things, and I found them quite interesting. Well, I come to find out that he was a former, he was, at the time, he's a member of the John Birch Society. Ooh, horrors, horrors. Well, you come 30 years later, and by goodness, a lot of the things that they spoke about or said about the globalists, world government, the Illuminati, and this whole crowd, sure enough, in my humble yet all-knowing opinion, it's come true, and we're seeing it today. So I'll be talking to Phil today about his past association with the Birch Society and his take on things, and we're going to be slamming on Israel and Zionism. And as always, whenever you criticize Israel or Zionism, you're automatically referred to as anti-Semitic. So, I mean, I get that. So, you know, that's how I preface everything. I know, you know, if I was debating somebody about this right now, I'd say, okay, get it out of your system. Call me anti-Semitic. Get it out of your system. Are you done yet? Because in my view, I like the modern-day term of an anti-Semite. And a modern-day term of an anti-Semite is, quote, a person that Jews don't like, unquote. So with that, I would like to welcome my longtime friend Phil here to Third Stream View. Phil, are you out there, my friend?
I am here. It's great to be with you today, PK.
Thank you. How'd you like my little monologue there?
Ah, sounded great.
Yeah. So let's cut right to the chase like I like to do. Back in the day when you were in the Birch Society, we spoke briefly about unions and free enterprise. And then you spoke about the globalists. This was in 1978 when I first heard about the New World Order, the Rockefellers, the Rothschilds, and all that. You know, I knew there was a power structure, but you clarified it quite a bit.
Well, I feel like I learned a lot from the John Birch Society and things that we, I'll use that awful word conspiracy that's not supposed to exist today, but you know, I learned a lot from it. But then years after that, well, I was a coordinator for the John Birch Society for almost 7 years altogether, and I covered southern Indiana and a part of Kentucky as a coordinator, and I learned a lot about these things. But one thing, in years after that, I was studying from several angles, and one thing that rather bothered me is the John Birch Society was fighting communism, as it was called, but I found out in later years that they could also be another word used for the word Zionism and these things, which the Birch Society, we kind of had some disagreements on that, and I'm no longer with them because I think they're leaving out one of the main roots of this whole problem. And so I'm kind of on my own, and there's I've learned a lot of things since then. A lot of things that was kind of confusing to me then, it's kind of went together. It's kind of making sense now how Zionism is really the key factor in all the problems we have today. And we can go any direction you want to go with that statement.
Yeah, well, I've come to learn that, and I agree. And let me say, I think I forgot to say that you were one of my mentors in this. You're one of my main mentors in this, so I thank you for that. And you kind of steered me. Well, I was, at that time I was, I think one of the first libertarian books I read was by Robert Ringer, I think, who was Jewish, probably, who wrote Restoring the American Dream. He also married a beautiful Playboy bunny, so I admire both of those. And then I started reading Ayn Rand. But, yes, you were my mentor, so through you I started learning more about this. And it seems like the Birch Society treaded lightly with the Zionist Jewish influence in all this, which you've come to learn and I've come to learn, too. I've also heard it said that communism could also be referred to as Jewish secularism.
Exactly right.
I usually am. Well, and see, what I've come to learn about all this is the power structure. Now, you know, all Zionists are Jews, but all Jews are not Zionists. And you also have the Christian Zionist wing that is pushed especially by Reverend, quote-unquote, John Hagee and even Pat Robertson. And before them, I think Jerry Falwell. Well, they really support Israel. We got to support Israel. Meanwhile, the Jews of Israel aren't even Semitic, most of them, and they have nothing to do with the connection of the Jews and the Bible.
Well, we know that Hagee's group, for example, they made one single donation of $9 million to Israel back in December of 2009. And of course, we know he's a very wealthy man. He's estimated to be worth about $25 million himself. He also has an 8,000-acre luxury ranch loaded with mansions and hotels and barns and a private landing strip. And I can't remember whether the Zionists gave him one of the jet planes or not. We definitely know that Jerry Falwell received a Learjet from the Israel government back in 1979. And there's one other evangelist of that type that did too. I can't remember whether that was Pat Robertson or one of the others now. But
why should I believe you? I think they were richly rewarded by God.
Well, I think God has a reward for them.
I think the question to conservatives and or people in general is, Israel's not our 51st state. And nowhere in the U.S. Constitution does it say that the American taxpayer is supposed to endlessly support Israel with their free American-made murder weapons and foreign aid. And this message, and there is an awakening amongst people. I often see on Facebook the word Israel, Israel. There is an awakening, especially if the economy is bad off as it is. Why are we giving all this money in foreign aid? Yes, as Ron Paul says, we give the Arab countries more when you add it all up. But, I'm sure you agree with me, we wouldn't give any foreign aid. In fact, what I would do is I would phase out. I would say, people of the world, 1 year from today, Americans will give no more tax-funded foreign aid to any foreign country for any foreign purpose. However, Phil, if you want to write a check to send to the charity or the concern of your choice, inside the country or outside the country, you are free to participate in voluntary charity, which would be guaranteed through an honest, true, free enterprise system.
Uh-huh. Well, one thing that bothers me is the fact at least one report I saw that bears out the fact that we give about $9 billion a year to Israel. And, of course, my question is why? What are we paying them for?
It's because I believe that there's a serious, Israel has their boot on America's neck, has had it for over 40 years, and, they always play the Holocaust card. Meanwhile, they're an apartheid terrorist state, and they have reaped what they have sown. What they've done to the Palestinians is tragic. And the writing's on the wall for a lot of Israelis, because a lot of them I've read, even through Jewish publications, that they're seeking a dual passport to get out of Dodge.
Oh, I think you're exactly right on that. And speaking of the Holocaust,
I usually am.
This opens another can of worms. But we found out there's no evidence at all that any of the Jews were gassed to death, as they talk about, and that even
since you jumped over to the Holocaust, I'll go with you on that for a minute. From my study to this point, millions of people died in World War II.
Right.
And in terms of the camps, people weren't gassed. There were crematoriums, of course, to dispose of all the dead bodies, most of which died from disease, especially typhus, starvation, forced labor, deportation, and war. The so-called gas chambers were for delousing because they had a major problem with lice, which spread typhus, which is why the inmates' heads were shaved. These were delousing chambers. So, yes, people died. There was a lot of Jews and others killed, especially in pits, and then, shot and covered over in Eastern Europe, which was something that, of course, the Nazis learned from Stalin when, in 1939, with the Hitler-Stalin Pact, the elements of the SS and other German military units trained with Russian Russian secret police and whatnot. So a lot of this Nazi techniques were learned from what Stalin had already done in the 30s.
Yeah. Well, actually, these camps were work camps for the work calls at that time, and they wouldn't want to be killing off the people that's working for them, or they have working for them. And those camps, they had their own money to spend, and they were free to come and go to do shopping, and they had all kinds of entertainment that would come in there at night's form, and had some of the best care from hospitals and doctors and all of that, and had swimming pools, and they'd put even on some of their own concerts. And why would they go to all that trouble if this was people that they were going to gas to death? And
I know that you speak the truth on this, because you have recently given me a DVD called The Holocaust Unveiled, which starts off with the absolute sheer oppression and terror that is used against those who are supposedly so-called Holocaust deniers, who are nothing other than historians of their own bent who want to look further into the details. And they're attacked, they're harassed, they've had their people, their places arsoned, only because they're inquiring. And it's a shame in Europe today that just, peaceful, intellectual, scholarly inquiry into the details of the Holocaust can get you thrown in jail. And everything I've read about it, including skimming a lot of your books, yes, they're critical of Zionism and Jewish power in Israel, and they question things, but they're never in the same books, is there any call for genocide or murder or harming anybody? It's their an expose on power as they see it.
Right. And you know, one interesting thing I think has been left out of our history books is what was known as the Bolshevik Revolution, which was actually the Zionist Revolution in what was known as the Soviet Union. And we've talked about the author Alexander Solzhenitsyn, I'm not sure I pronounced that right, but in volume 12 of the last writing that he put out, he affirms that the Jews created and administered the organized Soviet concentration camp system on which tens of millions of Christians and non-Jews died. And on page 79 of this book, he even names administrators of this, and all the concentration camps in the Soviet Union were ran by what we call Jews today, and we're talking about the murder of over 66, not 6 million, but 66 million so-called Christians and others in the Soviet Union. Now that's a much larger group of people than what we're talking about in Germany, which even they admit over there now that it wasn't 6 million, it was less than that, and on down it goes. And of course, they don't prove that any of them were killed in gas chambers. In fact, the one gas chamber in also, which was built after the war was over for tourists to go through and look at, and they found out it's not even connected to the building. So
I've seen that footage.
Right.
Yeah, well, yes. So, in other words, the way I've seen it, before World War II, Stalin's Jewish commissars were overwhelmingly Jewish, the population of his commissars, and they helped oversee the murder of 20 million Russian Christians. And a lot of innocent Russian Jews perished also during Stalin's reign of terror and even Lenin's reign of terror. In fact, and these were atheist Russian Jews who were Stalin's henchmen, who did these atrocious, horrific, genocidal acts. Now, as we know, during the Stalin era, during the late 20s, during the 30s, many Russian churches, if not all, were either destroyed or closed down. Yet,
that's exactly right, but all the synagogues were still there.
Synagogues were hardly harmed at all, even though these were Russian atheist Jews who did all this destruction. Since they came from their Jewish background, they chose not to do much harm at all to the synagogues.
Now, isn't it amazing how all that has been left out of our history books and both our high school as well as college classes today in this country, which shows who really controls the textbooks in this country, as well as who's controlling the news media and who's controlling, we go into the monetary system and just practically everything. And so the American people don't know about these things for the kind of control we have over our government and over everything that goes on in this country, from the news media on down.
True, and I didn't know much of this till about 6 years ago. In fact, after 9/11, instead of ganging up on Islam and Muslims, I started studying the other tribes, Jews, Jewish history, and all this sort of things. And I was shocked about some of the things I've read and learned. And again, I'm talking about criticism here. I'm not talking about hatred. I don't hate Jews. I don't hate black folks. I don't hate Latin folks.
Oh, I don't either.
I know. This is about criticism and an expose on power. This is not about hatred. I always talk about an expose on power, no matter who wields it or who yields it. And I don't back down from that. And so it's not a vendetta against any race or tribe or group of people. In fact, today with the powerful Zionists, you have the Bush Masonic wing in league in the Morgan, whatever's left of the Morgan crowd, in league with international Zionism, global Zionism, which is the Rothschild wing. So this Gentile crowd, they're in league with the Jewish Zionist wing. They're not killing each other. They're going about globalism and world government together.
That's exactly right.
That's how I see it. And that's why I like alternative media, especially. Thank goodness for the internet, which the state would still want to control, including Israel's most favorite Senator Lieberman. He wants to have a switch where they can just shut the internet off, like China wants to do. So there's powerful politicians, including Jay Rockefeller. They regret a lot of aspects of the internet because they cannot control information as quickly as they could before, when they stage all their wars or the things they stage with their CIA and their Mossad and Britain's MI6, the three of which I always mention, they are the masters of deception.
Yeah, thank goodness for that.
So at this point, Phil, I want to praise myself here. I've learned pretty well, huh? Your mentee, your student here?
Well, I appreciate the fact that somebody was listening to me back then. Not to say that I was right about everything, because I found out in later years that I hadn't been told exactly the truth on everything, and I still like to keep an open mind and still search for truth. And the more truth I learn, the more all of this goes together, and the more I understand why things happened like they did. And I was just saying about President Kennedy, and one statement that he said before his assassination, the fact that he said the high office of the president has been used to foment a plot to destroy the Americans' freedom, and before I leave office, I must inform the citizen of this plight. And we know that was just 10 days before his assassination, and I think this boldly making that statement could have helped cost him his life in admitting he was going to on reveal some things that they didn't want revealed. And I can say the same thing about some other people, like I worked under Congressman Larry McDonald of Georgia for a while.
Right.
And I helped him and Senator John Ashbrook of Ohio put together where a lot of the so-called terrorist groups of both kinds were being trained at the same places in this country, though they were supposed to be warring factions later. And they put a film out on this, which I helped them distribute. And right after that, John Ashbrook mysteriously died, and they said it was from a massive heart attack. Well, we know that Larry McDonald was a flight surgeon in the Navy, and he was a medical doctor, and he checked all that out, and he said, I know that if John Ashbrook had died from the type of massive heart attack they were talking about, it would have showed up in an examination that he had had just a few weeks before that, and it didn't show it up. And he was talking about how people is trying to reveal things that's really going on and being successful in it, how they could easily be murdered or with poison, certain things put into their drink or into their food, and poison that would never show up in an autopsy and things like that. He said that that could happen to any one of us, and said we could even be mysteriously shot down in airplanes and several things about like that. And, of course, we know that after that, that Larry McDonald himself, after he was planning to come back to this country from, he was in Alaska at the time, and he was on the Korean airliner 007, and we know the story behind that, how it crashed, and the fact that Larry McDonald was on it. And when I heard that news, I was somewhere between Louisville, Kentucky, and here, and when I heard that, just a warm feeling went down my throat. I thought, oh my gosh, he was just saying, not very long before that, the guy could happen to any of us as being effective in getting the truth out of what was really going on in this country. And here he was a very victim of the same thing that others were. And this has happened to a lot of people that's been trying to get the truth out. And it's like right now, I kind of fear for Ron Paul running for president, that same thing could happen to him. But we can't hide behind the bush because of these things. We still got to go on trying to get the truth out to the American people of what's really going on in this world, I think.
Well, I'm so glad and thankful that you've always, you know, been at the forefront of this movement, and appreciate what you've done throughout the years. And, you know, I know you've received, I'm sure, as we all have, criticism for it, or people don't believe it. You know, a lot of people don't want to believe it. But everything you just said, I would say, is tied into the CIA. And
exactly.
That speech, I didn't know that Kennedy gave that speech only 10 days before he died. But
yes.
Wasn't that the speech that contained where he spoke about there's some secret societies or secret organization that has no place in government?
Yes, he spelled out a whole bunch of things.
Because he wanted to splinter the CIA into 1,000 pieces, I think he said.
That's right. I think I'm not sure, but I think it was Columbia University that this speech was made at. I'm not sure, but I think that's where it was at. And it was like a bomb that went off when he did.
Right. Because he was gonna wind down the Vietnam War, take the advisors
right.
out, and then after they whacked him, after the CIA whacked him, then Johnson reversed everything he did, basically.
That's exactly right. It made a complete 90-degree turn, and we kept the war going in Vietnam. And of course, you know, who was financing all these wars we involved in? Well, your Zionist bank, Jewish bankers were financing it, and the longer we keep the war going, the more money they make off of it, more control they get over at both sides of all the countries involved in any conflict like that. And so this all fits together.
Well, it's just like today, you look at the war in Iraq and Afghanistan, who benefits? It's the Zionist
yeah.
bankers, the Federal Reserve, and of course, the military-industrial complex. So there's
right.
a lot of Gentiles involved in this,
oh,
but
sure.
there's a big, strong Zionist Jewish presence in all this. And look
right.
at the head of the Fed, and then, you know, and Bernanke, and then before him, Greenspan, and the Rothschild crowd. I received an email that said most of the, I'm not sure how correct this is, but it said most of the owners of the U.S. Federal Reserve are, Zionist Jewish European banking families, some in Italy,
well, that's exactly
different
right.
countries. You know?
That's right.
You know, and also, here's something I thought of, you know, this is kind of, you know, sad but funny. Here you got LBJ supposedly fighting communism in Vietnam, while at home in the U.S., he's pushing socialist agenda programs like Medicare and Medicaid, you know, all this kind of stuff. Not that I don't care about people and I want them to have health care. It's just when the state gets involved, the price goes up, it mandates things, it distorts the market process.
Well, we know there's always been a friction between Kennedy and Johnson. Of course, Johnson was pulling the ticket to carry the Southern vote. We know that. And
right.
But their views were just almost exactly the opposite of each other. And I just think there was really Johnson really had a hatred for the Kennedys, and I think he was a little jealous of him too. He's a younger man, and made the statement that, well, I can have just as many women as John Kennedy have, and on and on about that. So I feel like there's an inferior feeling there about a lot of things, and of course, Kennedy, like you say, was wanting to get our troops out of Vietnam. You know, a lot of things the American people haven't been told about the Vietnamese War is the involvement of the opium fields there. The CIA owned a lot of opium fields, and some of the natives there was becoming competition to them from a money angle. Of course, you always have to follow the money angle to understand a lot of these things. And so
right.
That's why we had a lot of people killed off in Vietnam, including some of our own military men that got wise to what was really going on with the CIA over there. And of course, there's been a lot of reports of some of our own boys that in order to get some of this opium back in this country, that you was able to put 50 pounds of heroin in the body of a lot of our boys, and they did.
You mean the cadavers? You mean the dead soldiers?
Yes, the dead soldiers, and they put that in there, and these would be special marked crates that they would be sent back to the United States in, special markings that, like, if it's going to the home state Air Force base, wherever it's going, they'd know that they needed to take the contents out of their bodies and sew them back up before they send them back to their families back home for a decent burial. And the poor families not even knowing what their bodies were being used for in the process of it. And there's just so many things like that the American people haven't been told about. I'm sorry.
Yeah, and a lot of troops in Vietnam were eventually addicted to heroin, too. They were shooting heroin over there. Now, I understand there was an excellent grade of marijuana over there, and I would have, of course, partaken in that, but, you know, I never used hard drugs. I say no to hard drugs. However, I'm totally against the drug war, and I know that if they got rid of the ended drug prohibition tomorrow, most people aren't going to go out and use heroin and, you know, cocaine and methamphetamine. I hate all that's all. You know, I'm judgmental from a health standpoint. It's awful stuff to put in your body. But without a drug war, without drug prohibition, we'd be much better off and much safer. And as you know, even now, British and American troops are guarding the poppy fields in Afghanistan.
Oh, absolutely.
Because the CIA uses that money from their international drug dealing to finance things that Congress won't give them money for their PSYOPs operations, their black ops operations, all this kind of stuff. So, you know, and another name I've used before on my show is the CIA is also Cocaine Importation Agency.
Well, you know, that goes back to when Bush Sr. headed up the CIA. They were using CIA planes to take military equipment to Central and South America and bringing back crack cocaine and landing it at Homestead Air Force Base and Mena, Arkansas. Who was it that was governor of Arkansas at that time?
Clinton.
Right, Mr. Clinton.
Yeah, well, I don't think it was crack cocaine. It was quantities of just, you know, probably pure, pretty much cocaine that was then processed into crack when it got to the States.
Right. I think,
you know,
cocaine can be used for military.
In America. Sorry, say what?
I'm sorry?
The origin of the drug war in the U.S., especially in the, you know, over the 20s, 30s, it was directed, especially the marijuana laws, were directed at blacks, Latins, and musicians. So there's a racial element to this tragic drug war that the federal government has pushed, not only on America, but on the world, and you see what's happened in Mexico in the last few years.
And when we talk about cocaine, you know, you've got to remember that there's a lot of good medical things that can be used for, and they've had a lot of good results in like just even in pain, it can have a lot more of a soothing effect on pain than some of the other things that they're using for that. But
Well, yes, Phil. Thank goodness back in the day, around the turn of the century in 1900, and before then, thank goodness, especially back then, that people had opiates and cocaine and morphine, because, you know, it's easier for us to look back and say, oh, look at the drugs they had. But thank goodness they had these for painkillers back then. They did not have more modern painkillers. And even even over centuries, morphine and, you know, byproducts from opium are good painkillers.
Yeah, not only that, but look at what we moored the ships with. The ropes that was used was also made out of the same stuff.
Made from hemp.
A lot of clothes were, and on it goes.
Oh, of course. Of course. You know, and Ron Paul knows about that. You know, Ron Paul would immediately pardon all nonviolent drug users. We could empty the prisons of so many people who don't belong there.
Absolutely.
And he would have not a hemp-based economy, per se, but hemp would play a large role in our economy, because what we really need is a true free enterprise, free market economy. I usually mention this almost on every show. I keep hammering home the point of, because I'm an advocate of capitalism, which is, in my humble yet all-knowing opinion, the most moral and productive system ever devised. But that does not mean crony capitalism. That does not mean corporate bailouts. That does not mean corporate welfare, corporate socialism, or state capitalism. It means free enterprise, where you go to the banks or you go to your investors to invest in your company. And if you make a profit, wonderful. And if you don't, you either absorb the losses, you go out of business, you reorganize, or you can sell to a competitor.
Sure.
That's free enterprise.
Exactly.
But I didn't learn that in school. I didn't learn that in business school.
Oh, no.
I didn't learn, you know, they don't really teach the ethics of capitalism and the morality of capitalism in college or business. I learned about, you know, marketing and, you know, finance and accounting. I didn't get a theoretical underpinning of free market capitalism.
No. They didn't want to teach that.
But, you know, oddly enough, Phil, when I speak with liberals, modern liberals, and I speak about economics, or when I tell them that capitalism is the most moral system ever, they initially roll their eyes. But when I say to them, you know, my friend from the left, or my liberal friend, or my Democrat friend, you know, crony capitalism, corporate bailouts, corporate welfare, that is an abomination to capitalism and free enterprise. And
exactly.
Right away, 99% of the time, they agree.
That's right.
In fact, often they agree more than conservatives or Republicans, who will often make an exception for subsidies and bailouts and crony capitalism.
Well, just like our political parties in this country, your Republican Party, your Democrat Party, they're controlled by the same people, but yet they want to make it look like there's a vast difference between them when there's not. And just like we're supposed to be getting out of all these wars we was involved in, but instead another country was added to it, and we're still there. And just like several people have said, if we got all of our military boys back home where they belong, and we got 130 different military bases set up, and some of them's been ever since the Second World War and before that, why are we still there? Said more of our, what is it, three times more money is being spent on those type things than what we're spending on Social Security and that type thing. Of course, Social Security, that's another ball of wax. That's money that was set aside out of our own paychecks. That's not federal money. That was money that each individual set up for his own retirement. And of course, that money's been used for everything else.
Let's touch on that, Social Security, because as you know, it's a socialist, centrally planned system, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely.
Now, in Roosevelt used it as a way to buy votes. And again, I don't want to harm our seniors or throw anybody out in the street. That system needs serious reform and phasing out. Because before that time, people saved for their own retirement. There was less taxes, so they could save for their own retirement. And the children and the families played a larger role. Now, the state has gotten in the way. It's weakened the family structure and made people think, oh, I've got Social Security to depend on. Well, it's never meant to be, you know, fully subsidizing their retirement, and it's a broken system. And Bush wanted to nibble around the edges. He met a lot of resistance. I myself would take a lot out of the military budget and give a lot of our seniors like a lump sum bailout, you know?
Yeah.
And I never would have voted to raid Social Security. Even though I don't like how it is, I would have had that lockbox on there. That's why it should have been a lockbox. And Democrats especially raided it.
Right, and now we have that system, I think, like you said, I think it should be phased out. But the ones that's paid into it, like the senior citizens right now, well, their part, they should get that back, as their money and all of that, and phase it out into something that works a lot better, like you just mentioned, you know.
Yeah, and what about, you know, buy our seniors annuities? You know, if I was running the show right now, I would have every state deal with its seniors and try to give them a lump sum, or first of all, again, ask those people who don't need it, who have paid into it, thank you, but if you don't need it, if you're willing to walk away from it, please do. Okay,
sure.
We get all those people out of the system. And then we buy annuities or give a lump sum buyout to our seniors, and we cut the young people loose so that they could put the money into a bank or, you know, private funds. Other private funds will come into existence. But we got to cut our young people loose because they know there ain't squat for them there in the future. And why continue the world's largest chain letter? And look at everything the government runs. The post office, the schools, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, they're tragically run. They're in far into debt, in the red. They're inefficiently managed because, as my grandfather told me 40 years ago, the government is the worst manager of anything. Look at
anything the federal government gets involved in, it's a lost cause.
I mean, I don't even want to see the states involved in it, but, you know, that's sort of another issue. If they want to mess up and do things foolishly, I believe in the 10th Amendment, where, you know, they basically, I believe in states' rights. Like, I've taken it further. I would rather secede from the Union. I've drawn up my own secession solution, which is an even better constitution than we have now that really protects individual rights, that prohibits, central taxes. It allows for, you know, micro taxes locally and in the state, but it wouldn't station troops abroad. It wouldn't go, you know, it wouldn't harm anybody's gun rights. We have a small military, but we wouldn't go picking fights and trying to orchestrate, civil wars and involvement that incurs a larger military, more intervention, and more lies and myths about more war.
Right. Yeah. Let's quit fighting wars for the Zionists that seem to get us in every war that they can come up with.
Well, and you've got all these powerful Zionists. Because my first question would be to these rabid Talmudic Zionists like Richard Perle, Paul Wolfowitz, Douglas Feith, this whole crowd.
Yeah.
I would really like to know, my question to all of them would be, I want to know, do you have and or have you ever had dual Israeli-U.S. passports? And you'd be shocked to see how many do, because they just come and go as they please. Our military and our government has been infiltrated by Israel's Mossad, which is their CIA, for years. And Mossad's mantra is, by deception, we make war. I think Israel's Mossad, I think their fingerprints are all over 9/11.
Yes, I had a friend who used to work for National Security, the NSA, until he found out just how rotten it really was. And he said the thing is, I mean, he got woke up at what was really going on, and he talked about how fearful he was of the part the Mossad had in practice everything that was going on and in regards to that. And so many people get into these organizations without really realizing what they're getting into. And then they're really fearful after they do find out just how much power is really carried there by the Mossad and the Zionists. It's mixed up in everything. And of course, the NSA, like many other things, should be abolished, along with Homeland Security and all of this.
Homeland Security. Phil.
Oh, boy,
the Republicans, the Republicans failed so badly on 9/11, they couldn't even defend their own headquarters, the Pentagon, which has the largest military budget in the world and is heavily defended. So what do? They give themselves a $40 billion raise with the Department of Homeland Security. The Republicans, who are supposed to be the watchdog of the dollar, they give themselves a $40 billion bureaucracy. They create a bureaucracy. That's the raise they gave themselves.
Right.
Now, you won't hear this reasoning and this logic on talk radio or Fox News or even CNN or those other networks for the most part, because they're under Zionist, pro-Zionist Jewish control and in the pro-war and the pro-military-industrial complex. But here, you hear it clearly delineated by myself, because I have examined this stuff, and I am not afraid to challenge it and speak about it.
Right.
And I would love to have my day. I would love to have a shot at Rush Limbaugh or Sean Hannity, this whole crowd. I mean, I would love to be able to have my, day to state my case. I like speaking truth to power. I always will. I can't be intimidated. I can't be bought. It's just my makeup, and I don't mind talking about this stuff, and I don't mind exposing it. And I've had email exchanges or Facebook exchanges with people who don't even know me, and they like where I'm coming from.
Yeah.
You know, and I owe a lot of this again to you, because you hipped me to a lot of this 33 years ago, and I've studied a lot of it ever since. And then I discovered the Libertarian Party, and that was for me. And through the Libertarian Party, I read, you know, I did a lot of I'm self-taught on a lot of this stuff. I discovered, by reading Ayn Rand, I discovered Austrian economics. I discovered Ludwig von Mises and Murray Rothbard, Henry Hazlitt. These are fellow travelers in the Austrian school, as was, and you've read years ago, Frederick Bastiat, the great Frenchman, his book, The Law, which is not a very big book, but I think it was written in 1849. And it clearly, is very critical of socialism and all types of statism.
Yeah, although all this information is out there, it's not hidden.
Oh my goodness!
Just don't take time to look into it, or just they're more interested in getting to see the next basketball game that's coming up, or as long as they got a roof over their head and something neat, they just don't want to get involved in anything. But this is all things that the people has access to this information. It's just they're going to just lay back and just buy whatever the 10 or 11 o'clock news tells them, or their daily newspaper, which is all controlled by the Zionists in this country. And no wonder they don't know anything.
America drinks and goes home. I mean, Americans are, they're into their sports and their television, and they see what's going on around them, but they haven't really looked into it very deeply. Although some are starting to, because they're unemployed, and they're trying to start to see the link of what all this has caused, what caused all this, and, the federal government caused 99% of this problem, especially with the Federal Reserve System, Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae, Bush's home ownership society. So, and it's funny to hear talk radio and Rush Limbaugh, they try to paint Bush out of the picture. Obama's going to blame Bush. Well, Obama, as awful as he is, he can blame Bush because Bush was the catalyst for this. Bush is Hoover, Obama's FDR. We got Bush's $750 billion prescription drug program, which was a way to buy votes from seniors. Also, his home ownership society, his wars, which he put on a credit card to China, his No Child Left Behind, and his $700 billion TARP bailout. So he started it big time. Obama has increased it at a much faster, larger rate. He spent, two or three times as much as Bush in half the amount of time, and he's expanded the war. He's tripled the Bush drone attacks. So Obama, to me, I like to say he's the racist in chief, because here we have a mixed race, darker skinned president who continues to kill dark skinned people on the other side of the world with his expanding wars.
Sure.
Now Libya's fallen, and Gaddafi, whom I'm not a fan of, but he was much better than what might follow. He was a secular Muslim country, as was Iraq. Iraq was a secular Muslim country. There was a small Jewish community. There was a small Christian community. Alcohol was tolerated. Women did not have to dress a certain way in Iraq. They had the largest number of college-educated
Arabs in Iraq.
And they destroyed a secular Muslim country and caused the plight and of millions of refugees and, you know, hurt all these, so many of these people, ruined the economy. And here you had a secular Muslim country. Saddam fought against fundamentalism for 30 years.
Right.
So, you know, and Syria is next on the hit list.
Oh, boy. Oh, yeah. And don't forget Iran. They've got to get a war going there, too, you know.
I fear that, and as you know, because I have said so, I say that Iran stands for Israel Requires American Naivety.
Yeah.
How do you like that definition?
Oh, boy. Yeah, with allies,
Americans, they're starting to wake up. The American sheeple, when they hear on the news, you know, they've tried to conflate this, the Zionists and the powerful Jews in the media and Hollywood, and of course Israel, as if Israel's problems are America's problems. Iran ain't my problem. Don't tell me in the media
right.
Our enemy, the Iraq. Iran's not my enemy. Iraq was
exactly
never my
right.
enemy. You know,
in fact,
so
we ought to be helping Iran
too, and make it sound like you know it's America's problem. Iran hasn't attacked anyone for centuries. Iran
right.
has over 25,000 Jews living there, and they are not threatened.
No, and we ought to be helping Iran instead of being an enemy to them. And you know, having a noble ally as like Israel, who needs enemies? You might say. I mean,
we're
on the wrong side of everything.
America had no enemies. I will not back away from this point. I keep hammering it home. I've said it before, probably earlier in this show. I almost say it on every show when it comes up, that America had no enemies, repeat, no enemies in the Middle East prior to 1948 when Israel was
right.
violently imposed on Palestine. Because before 1948, right. in the Middle East, in Palestine, Christians, Muslims, and Jews lived in relative harmony. Yes, there was a
along.
Few riots. There were some Jews killed. There were some Christians killed. But America's had riots in Detroit, in Chicago, in New York, in Miami.
Right.
So, you know, a lot of countries have had riots. But the Middle East was quite stable until 1948.
Until 1948. And don't forget, we gave Harry Truman, who was president at that time, $2 million to keep his mouth shut about the whole thing, too. And those people controlling Israel today, they're not Jews. Most of them came from Turkey and other places. And this was after
the Khazars.
The Khazars, right? And they accepted the teaching of the Pharisees that had completely drifted away from the Old Testament, and they liked that set up because they saw how they could control things with it, and so. They loved the idea of calling themselves the chosen, hey, God's chosen people. Well, they had nothing to do with that, and Israel was never their homeland. And the Palestinians who had been there for over 2,000 years, and what did they do? These people, like I said, that was never their homeland, and they come in there and took everything away from them and murdered the people, raped the women, and tore down everything that belonged to them. And these are the ones that ends up being our noble allies today. I mean, what is wrong with this country? And why can't people see that?
Because Israel's Mossad, in my view, helped stage 9/11, perhaps with some elements of the CIA. And, of course, Cheney was, I believe, heavily involved in this. They've been able to turn world opinion against Islam and Muslims. I mean, I don't care for the Muslim religion. I don't care for the burqas and all that stuff. But I hate the demonization of Islam and Muslims. And this is what Israel has been able to pull off. So they've been able to pull off this throughout the world, and, of course, the American sheeple, you know, have been able to demonize Muslims. And, yes, there is a small element of Islam and radical Muslims who are the jihadists and the people who are blowing shit up. That isn't staged by Israel, who is great at impersonating Muslims, or those who are doing it in this country. But this radical element, and other Muslims are sympathetic sometimes to what these radical Muslims are doing, but I understand why. I mean, I don't condone it, but I understand why. And they're doing this mainly partly 110% wise, because the U.S. continues to fund Israel with free American-made murder weapons and free foreign aid, and America, federal government, sorry, I don't mean to say America, I mean the federal government, the U.S. federal government props up, they propped up the Shah of Iran, they propped up Saddam, they propped up Israel, and they, you know, paid Israel, so it, I'm sorry,
exactly.
Propped up Egypt, so it would play nice with Israel for 30 years, which makes Mubarak a multi-billionaire, you know,
well,
and so
we can even go back and show how we
Muslim countries are pissed off, because
U.S.
forces stationed in Saudi Arabia. This is why these people are angry. There's over 1,000 U.S. military bases in over 140 foreign countries. That's why they're angry. They didn't just get pissed off on September 10th because they hate us for our freedom. This has been a long time coming. In fact, I myself said on 9/11, the chickens have come home to roost. And I was referring purely to the foreign policy of the U.S. federal government, not the American sheeple or the American people, to the foreign policy of the federal government. And may I say the unconstitutional foreign policy of the U.S. government.
And look how many people that was connected with the towers, we were talking about those a while ago, how they, about 4,000 supposed to be of Jews was connected with it that was somehow knew not to come in that day when the towers came down. Who gave them the word? Have you read anything on
that? I know that some Jews died. I know that Larry Silverstein, who used to dine there every morning, I think towards the top with his family, he didn't show up that day. You know, and then he put a bigger policy on the place. I mean, the whole thing stinks. Supposedly, you know, I haven't read it, but Ron Paul has. But supposedly, the 9/11 report didn't even mention World Trade Center Building Number 7, which came down 5:20 in the afternoon on 9/11, and it was not hit by planes. It had fire damage, but you can see the footage of it coming down.
Right, and Silverstein told him to pull it. That meant just go ahead and bring it down the demolition style. And you don't set that up in one day. It took a while to set the bombs or whatever all was used, and that as well as the towers to bring them down straight down like demolition style or like so many things we know of in this country. It went down that way.
And of course, and you know about the PNAC documents, the Project for a New American Century, that was signed by Rumsfeld and Cheney signed off on that, and other powerful Zionists with their dual Israeli passports. And it, said they want to expand the U.S. military, and a Pearl Harbor type event to galvanize U.S. public opinion. So they got their 9/11, which I believe they certainly helped to enable.
It's amazing how history just keeps repeating itself. We never learn from history, and it's like
I do.
Yeah, there's a few that do, but very
so
few.
So, Phil, let me interrupt you here, Phil. How do you like the pace of my show so far?
Well, we're getting the world situation all solved here. If somebody would listen to us, but who knows? I think more and more, like you say, people are waking up to some of this. It's going to take time if they ever do. And thank God for the Internet and the places where we can't have a little freedom of speech left yet.
Oh, for sure. But you like the way I'm handling this show. You like the pace? You like the way I run it?
Sure. I think you're doing fine.
Yeah, it's real calm. And there's plenty of humor mixed in. But with that humor mixed in, there's some pinpoint intellectual stuff coming across. So
We have to have a little humor for our sanity,
I mean, ideally, I would love to host a TV show with a Bill Maher type format where I would come down from the bandstand and I would do the monologue and I would host the show. And this is what I would do. But I'm sort of a cross between a mixture. I've got some of that David Letterman, Johnny Carson, Don Rickles mixed in with Austrian economics and good and bad humor. And I am completely Teflon-like to political correctness and the usual attempts at censorship, which is, of course, throw a conspiracy theory out there, call someone a racist or anti-Semitic. I just shrug that stuff off.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I want to move on to the Talmud. This is a book I didn't know that much about. It is the book of Jewish law, and this is the reason it has a lot to do with, I believe, why there was so much of this so-called anti-Semitism throughout the centuries. It is not as old as the Old Testament, but it's quite, almost, I think, and it, I believe, is the legacy of the so-called Pharisees whom Jesus debated with and argued with. And
right.
It is the reason that Jews have had a lot of stereotypical criticism of dishonest or cheap or any of this kind of stuff. It comes back to the Talmud, which condones this behavior. It condones much anti-Gentile behavior and resentment. And historically, Middle Ages in Europe or even past that, there was major book burnings of the Talmud in Europe. But
Absolutely.
The Old Testament or the Torah was not burnt. And when that great religious revolutionary, Martin Luther, who spoke Hebrew, first peered into the Talmud in the early, I believe it was the 16th century or 15th century, he was shocked by what he read in the Talmud.
That's right, and he really exposed it for what it was really worth and how it really looked down on Gentiles, and the Gentiles were just as animals, and then what it had to say about biblical things, that Christ was a bastard child, and that his mother Mary was a harlot, and it hated Christianity. And a lot of this goes back to the the Babylonian Talmud. And of course, they've revised it, you know, and took a lot of the real bad things out of it. But it's still there, it's still what they believe, and all of that. And it's
very anti-Christian. It condones lying and cheating, and it condones turning your reneging on oath and this sort of stuff. And this, I believe, is the reason where this anti-Semitism stems from, the behavior that's condoned in the Talmud,
I
understand it. And I told you this before, but I myself am a non-militant atheist, and I happen to know that I would say the majority of most world Jewry is either purely secular and or agnostic and or atheistic. And that is that most Jews practice their religion as a tradition. And most of them are not even Semitic. I mean, I guess the Sephardic legacy, the Sephardic ones in North Africa and Spain are, but most of the Jews are Ashkenazi. They converted en masse the area of Khazar in southwest Russia, northeast Turkey in 750 A.D., their king, under pressure from Islam on one side and Christianity on the other, chose Judaism.
That's right.
And they
picked three different types of religion, and that's
Jews.
What they picked. Right.
Am I right?
That's right. They picked it because
the legacy of that today is most Jews are white. They're not Semitic. The real Semites are the Arabs. To be anti-Semitic is to be anti-Arab.
Well, to be anti-Semitic, it'd have to come from Shem, and nobody could prove that today, because when you had the falling of Jerusalem in A.D. 70, everything was plowed up as far as genealogy is concerned, and there's no proof of who came from who. And, of course, when you had the Khazar Jews, they were mixed with everything, and like the ones controlling Israel today, they say that, well, they're about 95% atheists, but they still like to use that term. Oh, we're God's chosen people, and if you dare attack us, well, you know, God's not going to let you win any wars, because that's God's chosen people, and he's baloney.
Well,
those people were never truly Jew.
This is how they schmoozed the Christians and the Christian hierarchy, especially in this country. This is why you have so many Christian Zionists. They don't even realize
exactly that,
you know, the massive numbers of world Jewry who are, as I said, either secular, agnostic, or atheistic. The ultimate humor and hypocrisy, as I've worded it, is, as I like to say, is, God gave us this land, shouted the atheist Zionist Jews. How could God give you the land if you're overwhelmingly atheist anyway? You know, So again, our whole conversation today, when we've mentioned Jews and Zionism and Jewish power, it ain't connected to hatred.
I just
it's an expose on power
out.
As we see
Absolutely
it.
Absolutely not.
And for decades now, Phil, and you
say,
know this,
I just
Jewish
wanted to jump
authors
in and say hi,
who
gentlemen.
Write against Zionism and who expose this sort of stuff and who we've read from these Jewish authors, we don't hate them. They are called, overwhelmingly, immediately called by other Jews, they are immediately called self-hating Jews and or anti-Semitic. So if they're already Jewish, how can they be called anti-Semitic? I've just been told that our time is about up now, and I don't really want to continue today. I can't do it today, my schedule, and I don't think yours either, but
yeah.
I want to thank you again and praise you for coming on to Third Stream View.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. Love to talk about these
I
things.
I hope you've enjoyed yourself. And
I have, and I think
and
we've
I appreciate
about things
your input. I chatted a bunch myself today, but it was in reaction to what I've learned from you and, in the press and whatnot. So, again, Phil, my mentor, thank you so much for coming on to Third Stream View. I'm going to sign off right now. This is your not-so-humble host, PK, signing off, and I'm here again every Monday evening at radio.com, station 2. I'm on at 8:55 Pacific, 10:55 Central, and 11:55 Eastern. And until next time, this is your host, PK, signing off.